What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. You can always hit us up on the Specs Sex Line, 512-337-3776. Specs Sex Line is lit today. Two subjects we've discussed, basically. Haven't even gotten to the Texans and the Cowboys. We talked about the NFL officiating, which is a disaster and a nightmare. And we talked about LeBron James, the ambassador, the face of the NBA, finally commenting on the Daryl Morey situation. And people are upset with LeBron. I got to tell you, people are not happy. LeBron's people. I cannot believe they didn't prepare him better for that. That's the biggest story right now in the NBA. You knew they were going to ask you about it, and they didn't come up with a statement, like something that would have had him be seen in a better light. That's insane to me, man. LeBron needs to reevaluate the people around him, because this is the biggest story in the NBA, on the verge of being the most anticipated NBA season in decades. Because finally the Golden State Warriors aren't going to dominate it, and LeBron is now with the Lakers, and you have Kawhi with the Clippers, and the Rockets have Russell Westbrook and Harden. And, of course, in typical NBA fashion, we're not talking about anything on the court. We're talking about something off the court, an international incident. But LeBron James didn't have a better – Sam, can you get the LeBron James sound ready for those who haven't heard it? The Specs text line, not happy with LeBron. And I'm a LeBron fan, and I'm not happy with LeBron's statement either. That was just he criticizing Daryl Morey when it was asked about the international incident from the Daryl Morey tweet was not the way to go. One texter says LeBron's a bootlicker. Law office just said, F off LeBron. LeBron stands for social justice as long as it's not costing him. Another texter says, another texter here says, but David Moore was thinking about other people when he sent the, Daryl Morey is what they meant. Daryl Morey was thinking about other people when he sent the Twitter, but LeBron message shows he's thinking about himself and the rest of people stand to make money. Yeah, LeBron's statement, like I said, it just didn't make him look good. Someone says, all about money for LeBron. Don't get it confused, Rod. Yeah, I understand that, but LeBron has championed himself as, in my opinion, as a kind of a man of the people. And, he didn't say anything. His statement about free speech kind of turned into a statement about him being critical about Daryl Morey. And he should have just stuck with the free speech thing and should have never mentioned China or never mentioned it and be like, hey, man, we're about free speech around here. Say what you want to say, even if it's unpopular. Like, I think that and boom, he didn't have to do anything about China because I know nothing about Hong Kong or anything. And I think everybody would have been like, yep, at least you signed with free speech. Here's the LeBron James statement, which he brings up free speech, but ultimately ends up criticizing Daryl Morey's free speech.
We all talk about this freedom of speech. Yes, we all do have freedom of speech. But at times, there are ramifications for the negative that can happen. When you're not thinking about others, and you're only thinking about yourself. So I don't believe, I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl Morey, but I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand, and he spoke. And so many people could have been harmed, not only financially, but physically, emotionally, spiritually. So just be careful what we tweet and we say and what we do. Even though, yes, we do have freedom of speech, but there can be a lot of negative that comes with that, too.
And then I like the fact that he was like, Daryl Morey was uneducated on the topic. That would imply that you're very educated on the topic. I don't think any of us are that educated on it. We're just getting the broad strokes from CNN and Fox News and, MSNBC or whoever the hell else is covering it. And now ESPN and the NBA. So I don't like that. And obviously Daryl Morey, and for him to say that Daryl Morey wasn't looking out for others, he was actually thinking about the protesters in Hong Kong. That's why he made this the Twitter statement, or at least he tweeted out what he did. LeBron James later clarified, because he got blowback, "My team in this league just went through a difficult week. I think people need to understand what a tweet or statement can do to others, and I believe nobody stopped and considered what would happen. Could have waited a week to send it." Most people are taken from that. Daryl Morey could have waited till the NBA players were back from their international preseason tour, which also, I don't know, but I will say that I don't know if they were in danger over there over Daryl Morey's tweet that turned into an international incident. I don't know that. That could be the case. Either way, bad statement from LeBron. Not a good statement.
You're so dumb.
It wasn't a good statement. And we've talked about, you know, in Philadelphia at a preseason game, there were some fans who were kicked out because they were yelling and screaming about supporting Hong Kong. And that was in Philadelphia, and they were randomly ushered out of the stadium because they were disturbing the peace essentially there in the NBA arena. And there's and NBA is not the only one. Blizzard, which is a video gaming company, they have suspended one of their players who won a tournament, one of their gamers who won a tournament, because he basically supported Hong Kong on one of their streaming sites after he won a tournament. And they docked his pay, and they suspended him a year. But now I think I think it's a 6-month ban and not a year ban. But it's all because of the Tencent network, and I hope I pronounced it correctly. It's China's sanctioned TV network. The NBA has a $1.5 billion deal with this network to stream their games over the next 5 years in China, and that other. Blizzard Entertainment, which is the video gaming company I talked about, they also have a deal with that same TV network in China. So China's basically exporting their censorship via their influence with all of these different media outlets and entities. And so, yeah, it's a complicated discussion, too. I'm not saying it's not. But another texter says LeBron is a definition of fake. Someone says, yeah, we are not communists, and China is trying to control what we say, not having it. No, sir, not me. And remember, being anti-communist is in our DNA as a country. Like, we just, it's been bred in us, almost like racism. It's been bred in us. You know what I mean? So we are, and ideologically, obviously, very opposed to our democracy is what we believe in. So this is bringing up a lot of things, I think, for Americans. Here's the question. Will we care about it when the season starts? Because Colin Kaepernick, we cared about that when the season started, but it was more personal to us. It was happening right here in our own country. Will we care about this when the NBA season starts? Right now, people care about it. They do. But I wonder, will people care about it when the season starts? One texter says, either shut up in the U.S., Rod, or shut up overall. The hypocrisy is what gets people's goat. Yeah, you're right. People are saying now, speak out. You speak out against if you speak out against social injustice, I believe the MLK quote that LeBron tweeted out that's been thrown back in his face is that, you know, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, you should always speak out against injustice, and we should. We're not all courageous enough to do it, but we should. When we see there is injustice, we should always all say something. Someone says the NBA sure loves to advocate and promote social injustice until their bottom dollar is potentially at risk. Yeah, I mean, the NBA is in the same situation the NFL was in, and it's amazing. I think the responses are very similar from fans, that you look like a hypocrite right now, and, just pick a side. And you're going to lose either way. You're going to lose either way. Either the NBA is going to lose a ton of money if they let their players and I think right now the NBA, they're going to do to this controversy kind of what happened to the Colin Kaepernick controversy in the NFL, where, you know, Colin Kaepernick obviously not a part of the NFL anymore. So everything goes away. There are still players kneeling on the sidelines every game. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. It's not a political card that the president's trying to play. Doesn't matter. Nobody gives a damn. Right. And the person that started the movement is out. So, you know. You don't, people don't even discuss it. I think the NBA, similarly, they're going to wait till the season starts. Hopefully it'll go away. But if they get fans at games actually protesting on part of, you know, Hong Kong and trying to get players to speak out against and then players start speaking out, then they'll have a problem. I think ultimately the players have been told, don't take a stance against China. just side with free speech, which is probably what LeBron should have done. Just side with free speech. Man, in this country, we can say whatever we want. That's the First Amendment. Honestly, somebody should just gave him the First Amendment and have him recite it. And people would have been like, man, LeBron is awesome. He just recited the First Amendment. That dude, he is educated and intelligent. I love LeBron James. Except he went up there and I don't know what the hell. What he said didn't gain him any followers or street cred on either side of the debate. And I don't think it's coincidence, by the way, that China, that network Tencent that broadcasts the NBA games, which is the China sanctioned TV network, they are now streaming NBA games again. And the only player really to speak out publicly on this issue was LeBron. And his stance was, and it wasn't obviously pro-China or anything, but he criticized Daryl Morey instead of just saying, nah, First Amendment, baby. First Amendment, we say what we want to say. He's got a right to say what he wants to say. And I think they're all about pleasing China, and so that there is no, the tensions between the NBA and China can settle down. And if LeBron James had said probably anything other than what he said, I don't know, maybe the tensions continue to flare between the two sides. So it's a really complicated subject. I'm not saying it's not. Someone says, one texter here points out that another perspective about the NBA, he said the owners and commissioners shouldn't get to push players out front to deal with this. That's a good point too. Yeah, I don't know why they're putting the player. Well, the players have these days. I don't know if you can avoid it, honestly. But the owners won't speak on it. No owner is probably going to say anything. Tilmer Fertitta had to say something because of Daryl Morey, but no owner is going to speak on this. Just like we didn't get how many owners spoke on the Colin Kaepernick thing? Not many. Yeah, we got some. I don't know if we got a lot of them to speak out on it publicly. All right. So, we'll get back to some football here, but, yeah, the NBA's got a lot of issues that they got to deal with, and LeBron James' statement's not helping it. All right, let's talk the Texans, because we haven't given them enough props for their win over Kansas City. Talked about the Cowboys being a disaster. We'll continue to talk about the Cowboys being, they're not a joke yet, but they're getting there. I heard, on 105.3 The Fan, I heard Jerry Jones say that he was asked about Jason Garrett, of course. A lot of people ask him about Jason Garrett and Jason Garrett's job security. And he said that he believes that Jason Garrett would be a sought-after coach if he was on the open market, I believe was the term that he threw out. He would be a sought-after coach, meaning that people would snatch Jason Garrett up and hire him as their next head coach if he was on the open market. Here's the actual quote. He said, I want to talk about our team, talk about our coach. I have felt that we've got a lot invested in Jason Garrett. He's had a lot of years that he's been part of the Cowboys, and he's involved into what I think is a top coach. He would be a very sought-after coach if he were out here in the open market. Yeah, as a position coach. Yeah, I'd bring him on as a quarterback's coach. I don't even know if I'd bring Jason Garrett on as an offensive coordinator at this point. And here's my big problem with Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett, as a head coach, I don't know if he's got any testicular fortitude. There is something wrong when you have a contract year and your job's on the line, and the biggest problem with your team is your expertise, and you don't decide to take over. Like when Jerry Jones decided and told the media, I'm not giving him an extension. He's gonna coach out his last year, which means everybody assumes, oh man, he's coaching for his job. And they fired the offensive coordinator, Scott Linehan, because the offense is putrid and it's a 20th century offense in a 21st century NFL. And they decide we got to hire a new offensive coordinator. Bill O'Brien, for all of his faults, I do give him credit because he is, to me, I would rather have him as a head coach than Jason Garrett. Because at least when the fit hits the shan, and everything is a fuster cluck, he says, you know what? Put it on me. I'll be the damn GM. I'll be the play caller. I'll be the head coach. And when everything ends up, you know, imploding, you can all go, see, Bill O'Brien is the reason. And I respect that. Jason Garrett has avoided that responsibility. Hire a first-year offensive coordinator? You used to be an offensive coordinator, and your offense is the problem. Why wouldn't you go, no, my job's on the line? No, my job's on the line. I will call the plays. If it's my job, I'm going down, I'm going to call the damn plays, okay? All right, I'm not going down because some first-year offensive coordinator doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and he ends up getting nervous, all right? And he ends up, you know, not being able to be able to handle the big moment. It overwhelms him. No, Jason Garrett didn't go that route. Jason Garrett went, nope, I want to I'm just going to sit back, clap, and pray for the best. I'm going to hope for the best. That, to me, when he – that move alone, I was like, man, I don't – Jason Garrett's done. Even – because I said, even if Kellen Moore works out, you're still going to want to fire Jason Garrett and hire Kellen Moore. It's like And that's, I think, right now, that's why Tony Romo's hinting that Jason Garrett's fingerprints are all over that offense. It's very possible that offense was looking so good that Jason Garrett was like, you know what? I want to be part of this. I want to be more a part of this thing. This is looking good. Hold my fingerprints on it. I don't want Kellen Moore to get all the credit, because if he gets all the credit, then, hell, I still got to worry about my damn job. They're giving first-year head coaches jobs these days just because they can coach a quarterback. I can't risk that. And even though I know Jason Garrett has the ultimate job security, to me, your team is becoming Jason Garrett. Lacking testicular fortitude. You know what I mean? Like the team reflects leadership. Your team is becoming Jason Garrett. You're trying to avoid it, but it's unavoidable. Ultimately, that team's going to become Jason Garrett, and then I don't think that team's going to be good enough to win the playoffs. And I've been saying it over and over again. And I think this week, when you have Doug Peterson coming out saying, we're going to go to Dallas and beat the Cowboys. And he's not saying that because he's looking at the Cowboys roster and saying that they are – that they're not talented or that they're subpar when it comes to their personnel. He's looking at them coaches and saying, man, I'm going to outcoach this dude. this dude's a joke. I'm going to outcoach this guy. You just get here, man. You can give me one of the worst teams in the league and I would outcoach this guy. He just got outcoached by Adam Gase. I'm going to outcoach him. The league's about coaching. I'm going to outcoach him. The San Francisco 49ers are undefeated. They are not the most talented team in the NFL. They got a really talented unit on their D-line. D-line might be the best D-line in the league. But overall, talent-wise, they're probably, what, top 15 in the league? Something like that? Coaching. The Patriots are never the most talented team overall. Never. Never. Ever. Matter of fact, Belichick don't even want to be the most talented team. He avoids it. He's trying to get undrafted free agents that are cheap. He doesn't want to be the most. Guys get all pro status, and hell, Belichick might trade Joe behind. Nah, get out of here, man. Huh? You think you're too big for your britches? Coaching. And in that league, I fear a Jason Garrett coach team will always fall short. Well, matter of fact, I think I know it. All right, Texans. Just get talking about Bill O'Brien and what Bill O'Brien's been doing. I saw this stat about Deshaun Watson, and this is part of why Deshaun Watson's been so successful. He's got back-to-back games, by the way, where he hasn't been sacked. So that's the first time since he's been a Houston Texan where he's going back-to-back games without being sacked. That's big. I know as a people are like, oh, what do you mean? That happens all the time. Well, if you're a Texans fan, you know that does not happen all the time. The offensive line's getting better. I saw that Pro Football Focus said Deshaun Watson threw the ball on average. His time to throw, which snap release time, was 2.66 seconds from the time where he snapped the football on average to when he threw the football on average. So now he's starting to get the football out quicker. That was the same thing in that game versus the Falcons. He got the ball out, I think, in 2.4 seconds on average. That means Deshaun Watson's, whatever he's seeing in the pre-snap, is getting confirmed really quickly in the post-snap. Whatever he sees as his pre-snap read, oh, it actually is being confirmed, and he's moving quickly with the football, moving, and it's a rhythm to that offense now with Deshaun Watson. And that's part of the reason, that's pass protection. That insulates him within that pass protection. Laremy Tunsil, Pro Football Focus, has rated him as the top offensive tackle in the NFL through weeks 4 through 6. That trade is paying off big time. Titus Howard, he's got an injury that he's going to be dealing with for the next couple of weeks. But it's been, the moves they've made on the offensive line have paid huge dividends. So the two, think about the three games now in the history of Deshaun Watson's career where he hasn't been sacked with as a Texan. There are three of them. This one where he went, they went to Kansas City and beat Patrick Mahomes, which is tough to do. They outgained Kansas City 500-300. They dominated time possession 40-20, basically, in terms of 40-20 minutes. They, I think, rushed for almost 200 yards, and they were without their two starting cornerbacks. They didn't have Bradley. Roby went down in the game late with a, I think a left, he left the game with a groin injury, if I'm not mistaken, and Jonathan Joseph didn't play in the game because he had a hamstring injury. So you're missing your two starting corners on the road at Kansas City, and you lost the fumble on the first snap. You trailed 17-3 in the second quarter. You had three touchdowns dropped, two by Will Fuller, one by DeAndre Hopkins. You missed a PAT. You missed a makeable field goal. Your quarterback had two interceptions, and you were on the road at Kansas City versus a front runner for MVP, and you still won. Holy Chicago. How does that happen? Deshaun Watson is how, because he wasn't sacked. I mean, if you can keep Deshaun Watson clean, he'll give you a chance. He'll give you a chance. You just got to keep him clean and upright and healthy. He'll give you a chance. So that one, and then you also have last week, or sorry, 2 weeks ago now, where Deshaun Watson had a performance that was so good that now his cleats are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I mean, that the performance was that good. He had, what, I think he was 28 of 33, 426 yards. He had as many touchdowns as he had incompletions. So that was the game versus the Falcons. And the other game, the third game where he's been sacked zero times, was the game versus the Miami Dolphins in 2018. He also had five touchdowns and four incompletions in that game with nearly a perfect passer rating of 156. They just got it. That's what I think Bill O'Brien understood. I just got to keep them clean. And that's why he invested so much in Laremy Tunsil and, yeah, maybe paid too much, but is there a price you can put on keeping a quarterback like Deshaun Watson clean, that when he has been without a sack in a game, when he hadn't been sacked, he's had your biggest win you've ever had in your career on the road, if you're Bill O'Brien, and he has put up Hall of Fame-type performances in the other two times where he hasn't been sacked? I think it was totally worth it. Whatever they gave up. Something else that is totally worth it is to get out there and get some Myers Elgin smoked sausage. All right. Still, no matter which flavor you're getting, Myers Elgin smoked sausage is fantastic. Of course, it is the perfect complement to all of your football watch parties, your tailgating festivities, your backyard barbecues, or you can make it your go-to lunch option like I do at least twice a week. I just fry it up in a pan, wrap it in a tortilla, dip it in barbecue sauce. Easy, quick, convenient, and delicious. Myers Elgin sausage has been perfected with a secret family recipe for over 80 years through four generations, and you can taste that Texas pride in every bite. That's why real Texans all over this great state, they call Elgin the sausage capital of Texas. My favorite flavor, the jalapeno and cheese, but you can't go wrong with the hot or the original. There are fan favorites like the Tejano, the sage, the beef, the garlic flavor. I love the summer sausage in the original or the jalapeno, and you can find Myers Elgin smoked sausage wherever you do your grocery shopping at Walmart, HEB, Randall's, City Market, Fiesta, Brookshire Brothers, or other select independent grocery stores, or just make it easy on yourself and go to QtopiaTexas.com. That's C-U-E-T-O-P-I-A Texas.com, where you can get Myers Elgin smoked meats delivered right to your door. That's right, a taste of Texas with the brisket, the ribs, the sausage, sauces, and so much more at QtopiaTexas.com. Myers Elgin smoked meats, real Texas, real good. That's Myers Elgin smoked sausage. All right. We'll come right back, and then we'll get into Texas football. I promise you. I just want to hit some Texans and some Cowboys. We'll hit some more of that on the other side, but we'll dive deep behind the burnt orange curtain, talk Texas football, more of the post-mortem, the autopsy of the Texas OU game. All that and more right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. Somebody sent me a story about the Hong Kong protesters. Apparently, they are upset with LeBron James' statement too. There's plenty of, as a website, like a online platform that was started by the Hong Kong protesters, and apparently they are on there trashing LeBron. And someone sent me a story and said that LeBron James no longer King James for Hong Kong protesters. When apparently there was a when the ball smashed into a photo of LeBron James' face stuck above the hoop and dropped into the basket, the Hong Kong protesters cheered. Apparently, they also trampled on jerseys bearing LeBron James' name and gathered in a semicircle to watch one burn. They're like, it's like LeBron James' the decision all over again. That's the same stuff we did here in America when he decided to go to Miami. That's not that crazy. All right, there you go. So LeBron James not very popular with the Hong Kong protesters. Okay, you know what? I saw The Joker, and so did my man Sam. I want to give a blackbuster review without spoiling anything about The Joker. So I want to, you know, let's do this really quickly. I want to get into a couple of minutes here about The Joker because I went to see it this weekend. And I will say this, because Sam saw it too, so we can break it down a little bit. I believe it to be in my top five easy comic book adaptations to cinema. Easy.
Oh, I think it beats anything Marvel's put out by yards and yards
okay,
and yards.
See, I thought I was being crazy. I was going to say, honestly, other than Dark Knight with Heath Ledger's Joker,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a better comic book adaptation in my opinion. Because I love the Joker and Batman. They're my favorite comic book.
Me too, man.
Characters. Yeah. There you go. So, you agree that Heath Ledger's Joker, and this is the question people want to know. Is it better than Heath Ledger's Joker, or is Heath Ledger's Joker still the, you know, the creme de la creme? Is that still the standard of
Joker? That's so hard to say, because it's being an origin story, you know, it's like, he's not the Joker the whole movie. He's just a crazy dude.
Exactly. He's turning into the. It's a transformation that's interesting to watch. It's like, oh, I'm with you. I think that Heath Ledger was on screen for like 30 minutes. In The Dark Knight, and he transformed an iconic character that we had known for what 50, 60 years.
Yeah, maybe even more.
In 30 minutes. Like we never ever, because of that Joker, that's why Joaquin Phoenix will play this Joker. Nobody ever interpreted the Joker that dark, and I still think it's number one. But honestly, it's Tupac or Biggie in my opinion. You could go if you went Biggie, Tupac's my guy. But if you went Biggie, I don't disrespect your opinion. Biggie is in that conversation. If you want to say Joaquin Phoenix is a better Joker, I could totally jump on board with that. He was that good. He should be up for Best Actor.
I think it definitely got dark. Like, I think Joaquin Phoenix Joker kills more people than, you know, Heath Ledger Joker did. Like, I think they definitely got the darker angle of the whole transformation of it really well, in the way that, you know, it's the start of it. You know, he's just beginning to kind of get these weird little tendencies that he has. And I thought it was great, man.
Yeah. No. I'm with you. I thought it was fantastic. I would encourage everybody to go see The Joker. It was great. And now we know a lot of the backstory on The Joker. I don't want spoilers. No spoilers. But I always wondered how he had so many henchmen. And now we know. And I'm not going to spoil anything. But now we know why The Joker had so many people that were devoted followers. And I was like, who the hell is devoted to following The Joker? That's very unrealistic. Now we know why about it. Someone says, what about Logan? That was a really great comic book adaptation. Yeah, that is true. Logan really good. I thought they did a really good job considering the expectations were really high. Like, I went into it expecting not to like it almost. Like, expecting, like, there's no way it's going to be that good. They're going to screw this up somehow. They're going to take the cheap route. They're going to take the lazy route. They did not. They did a great job of, the script was fantastic, the acting was good, and it wasn't that much action. I mean, how much action we get? We'll get four or five?
Yeah,
maybe
couple
four
scenes.
Or five scenes?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I liked Logan a lot, but I had a problem because I read the comic book, the Old Man Logan, that it was adapted from.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so Old Man Logan is crazy, man. I don't know if you've ever heard of Old Man Logan, but like the way it starts out, he's been living on a farm. He's got like a family, and there's all these mutated little baby Hulks. And they come through, and they basically, they're, you know, mafia kind of little baby Hulks. And they say, hey, man, you know, if you don't pay up on your land, we're going to kill your family. And
in
he's
the
like,
in the comic? This
yes.
Is kind of, yeah,
yes,
okay,
man.
Okay, gotcha.
So
I gotcha.
He goes through his whole little adventure to try and save his family, make this money, gets back. Hulk's murdered all of his family anyways. They didn't wait at all.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's...
Dude, that's dark for, then, for the comic book.
Yeah, man. So then he has to go, you know, he starts going through just trying to kill all these Hulks, you know, and venture out into the wasteland and live as Old Man Logan.
That's fantastic. Yeah. No, I mean, I love the drama of it, man. It's great the way he set it up. And I'll say this, one of my biggest concerns was how are they going to resolve, you know, the thing with the Joker, we always want to know is, did the Joker actually kill Batman's parents? Because in the original... Tim Burton Batman, that's how he interprets it. That's why the obsession with Batman starts.
Right.
Because he kills his parents, and then Batman's always looking for that guy, and that guy ends up becoming the Joker, blah, blah, blah. Ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight, that kind of thing, Jack Nicholson. But in the Dark Knight interpretation, that's not the case. It's a random thug.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And that I thought they did a great job of resolving that conflict for Batman enthusiasts.
Yeah, I was honestly surprised that any of that was in there, you know?
Oh, they did, yeah, man.
It's hard to talk about it without spoiling, honestly.
I know. We sound stupid, but
yeah.
Just want to throw it out. All right, let's get back to some football stuff. I want to talk about Longhorn football here. We got to our Longhorn Blitz podcast, me and my man Matt Butler and Jeff Howe, and really, in examining the Texas OU game, I think we still came away, you know, days later with the, I think now even a more clear picture that the players didn't come ready to play, but the game plan was a subpar game plan at best. And even going back and watching the game, and I've watched it twice already, and I got to go back and watch it again. I got some stuff I'm still tracking. The second time I watched it was all about missed tackles. And I want to go back and now look at offensive innovation. I want to go see if there's anything offensively that was done that I hadn't seen, even on the first watch, or, you know, something they did, a wrinkle that they added. You know, one of my big criticisms, the thing we talked about on Longhorn Blitz podcast, you know, Tom Herman went into that game with a game plan that was a pretty arrogant game plan. It was, it was a game plan that really threw it, basically said that my guys are better than your guys. My guys can beat your guys. They don't necessarily need a schematic advantage. And the players didn't get one. And in those one-on-ones, Oklahoma beat Texas guys the majority of the time. I think partly because the Texas players weren't ready to play. All right, we know that because Texas had their worst pass blocking, run blocking game of the season on offense, and their worst tackling game on defense. Hell, there's only a few basic, kind of the basic things, fundamentals of football. It's like throwing the football, catching the football, running with the football, blocking for people who are throwing, running, and catching the football, and tackling. You know what I mean? And Texas was really bad at like three of those things. Had five drops. We had 21 missed tackles. Allowed 9 sacks and 15 tackles for loss. Done with the basic fundamentals. And so when they got to the situation where they were, you know, in a one-on-one with an Oklahoma player, Texas lost most of those one-on-one battles. But you could argue they were not put in a position to succeed. And I think offensively, that's why Tom Herman took the loss. It was like he's more angry at himself than anything because, yeah, that game plan offensively, I didn't see them give the players a strategic advantage anywhere. There was nothing long, and Longhorn fans know this team very well. I know that 40% of Devin Duvernay's targets are behind the line of scrimmage. I know that 60% of Devin Duvernay's targets are within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. I know he's not really going to go deep that often. And so they were flat-footed on those Devin Duvernay bubble screens and wide receiver screens. They were ready for it. They weren't afraid of his 10-3 speed down the field, and there was not a bunch route or a bunch concept and a starburst route concept to try to get the wide receivers open and try to get them in more space. When you know your offensive line is not blocking well, what's the adjustment? Do you move the pocket? Do you decide, know what, we're going to use more bunch formations, more flex and minus splits for our wide receivers to try to run switch routes and pick routes and rub routes, try to get them open quickly, get the ball out quickly, use the quick game? You know, I didn't really see the adjustment to the pressure either. And maybe there was no adjustment because the offensive line didn't handle the pressure very well. But I don't know if there was initially a great game plan, and I don't know if the adjustments were good enough. The adjustment I saw was throwing the ball deep. They threw it deep more in the second half to take advantage of single high safeties and to take advantage of Oklahoma in some man coverage. Okay? They were taking shots anyway. You know, to me, that's more strategy and not scheme. I wanted to see different formations and personnel packages. Texas was exactly what we thought they would be. And we've been waiting for that wrinkle, something that they kind of add to it, that evolution of the offense. And I don't really know if we've seen it. I thought we'd see it versus LSU, didn't see it. Thought we'd see it versus Oklahoma State, didn't see it. That was the start of Big 12 play. Thought we'd see it versus Oklahoma, biggest game of the year, still didn't see it. So I know the offense is what it is. But when you're going up against Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch and like talent in Oklahoma, who's got athletes like you, you got to give them a schematic advantage, because just like when you play at LSU, you're not going to be able to just every time win the one-on-one battles. Sometimes you need to be put in a better position. You see how they used CeeDee Lamb, Oklahoma did? They move him around. He's in a slot. He's in motion. You never know what the hell CeeDee Lamb is on the field. And so is the conundrum for the defense. Where is CeeDee Lamb? Sometimes he gets lost and ends up down the field wide open. How does CeeDee Lamb end up wide open? You know what I mean? And I know he's a great player. He can be double covered and still make the play. But Lincoln Riley uses strategy to get him open. Colin Johnson is never flexed. He's never with a minus split. And we've seen him do this before. Big 12 title game last year. Go watch it. Go watch how they use Colin Johnson, how they move him around, how they put him in the slot, how they put him in a bunch formation. I've seen them do these things, and they didn't want to do it. So my criticism of Tom Herman is he thought he was going to go in there and beat Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma straight up. Like, my guy is better than your guy. This ain't 05 Texas. Your guy ain't better than their guy every time. They're going to need a coaching advantage, and they did not get a coaching advantage in that game. They were not ready to play, but they also did not get a coaching advantage. That was also the case on defense. Who goes up against the best dual-threat quarterback in college football without a spy? I know there's no real way to effectively stop a dual-threat quarterback, but you're supposed to have a spy on him, especially on third and longs. And talk about arrogant game plans. Todd Orlando didn't want to have a spy on the best running quarterback in the country. No coaching advantage. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into some more NFL topics. That's some Cowboys news, notes, and nuggets to share. All of that and more before we get out of here. This is the Ridecast right here on the Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. We are debating the Joker here. Chad. Chad looks at the world through rose-colored glasses.
Oh, come on. That's not always true. I'm a Cowboys and Aggies fan. That's impossible after this weekend.
That means you are a glutton for punishment.
That's right. I'm 6-6 combined. How are you?
Okay, it's a great text here on the Specs text line. I like this. They said the Kansas game is setting up to be the perfect trap game. Kansas and Tech. You know what? I agree with that.
Perfect trap game.
I know that sounds crazy, but I agree with that.
I think there's two more perfect trap games coming.
Iowa State can no longer be a trap game because he coached there, and you know it's coming, and Iowa State's no longer a scrub. Baylor, they're undefeated, so Baylor can't be a trap game because you'll see it coming. Trap game, its whole point is it's a trap. You don't see it coming.
I think it's TCU and Iowa State.
I don't know, man. TCU see coming. Gary Patterson is a great coach. The whole point of a trap game, I think people forget about what a trap's supposed to be. You don't see it coming.
So you're saying
you literally Tom and Jerry style,
right?
Road Runner versus Coyote. You ran over like, oh hell, a trap. Acme style.
So you're saying
it's a trap.
This is the
game. There's no way Kansas is gonna beat us in football.
So this is the Jets.
Yes,
it's Jets Cowboys.
Trap game with a trap game.
You don't see it coming.
You don't see it coming. Think about it. You got injuries everywhere.
What about K-State?
K-State could be that, too. I can see that being K-State.
Because they're no longer that the purple menace that's really been you've been messing with, right? Because new coach and, you know, what they've been dealing with at quarterback.
If Puka can run for 100-and-some yards on Oklahoma, your linebackers are hurt.
Yeah.
Your secondary is hurt.
The lesson
and Puka is probably one of the best running backs in the country.
The lesson that's learned in that game with Oklahoma and Kansas is you cannot pay attention to Kansas for a decent part of the game and still beat them. So that's why I wouldn't say it's a total trap, because Texas cannot pay attention and still win.
I know, but in terms of overlooking, I think it can be trapped.
The dangerous games are the ones where if Texas isn't paying attention and they can't get out of it, Waco,
I agree with that. That's
and
a good point.
Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Those are the really dangerous ones.
Yeah.
That's what the Cowboys found out in New York.
Hey, man. Kansas has beaten Texas before, damn it. And I can say
no,
that.
No, yeah, that's right.
I want to thank my man Sam. Doing a great job. Chad and Kevin coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Remember, the revolution will not be televised. Talk about it right here on the broadcast. Love you guys. Have a great night. Peace.